What's going on, everyone? It's Kyle Cruz, and if you found yourself on this corner of the internet, you found yourself at the KC at the movies. And this podcast, you know, I sit here in a dark room with faint light on, and I talk about film. I talk about movies. And what a year of movies we had last year. Mentioning that because this is our first episode of 2024. To the people, the previous listeners, to the people that were listening before and that saw that post on my Instagram, yes, the next podcast was going to be The Killer, but I'm still trying to work out this new work schedule with my new job and everything. And yeah, I'm still trying to work that out, and it's trickier than I thought. I can only find time for these brief ones like this, where we talk about, you know, things like Golden Globe nominations, which is the last thing, but this one's going to be Oscar nominations and a few things I've been watching. So until I find that time, that's when that'll come out. So apologies about that. But the list video for YouTube, that will be coming out soon, because I've now seen all the movies I need to see. I've finally seen them all. So I'll be bringing out my top 10. I didn't want to make the deadline for the end of the year because I just made that last year, and I don't really want to push myself again. I didn't really want to push myself again to get that out there. So that was just a choice that I decided to make anyway. And I'm happy with this one, just to watch things at my own pace and deliver a list when I can feel like I fully can talk about all the movies that, and I feel good about the movies that are on that list as well. But I didn't forget the horror thing. So I will be doing a horror segment as well as part of that, looking at breaking that into like a three-parter horror TV shows and movies. So yeah, that'll be coming down the pipe. But I did want to talk about, most importantly, these Oscar nominations that came out this past week. And even though the last podcast wasn't Golden Globes nominations, it's just, you know, it's funny that, you know, Golden Globes have now gone and went. I was happy with all the people that took home the awards for that, especially Kieran Culkin and the Emmys as well. Kieran Culkin as well getting big, Matthew McFadden, Sarah Snook. Succession pretty much winning big at both of those ceremonies. I knew the nominations were coming out for the Oscars, and I'm just like, well, fuck, I'm going to have to make the next episode about more nominations. But I will talk about some things that I've been watching at the end, which is something I want to try this year as well. I want to try a segment where I just say what I've been watching and give some recommendations at the end. Now, I tried to do that regularly before, but I want to make that kind of like an official segment at the end before we sign off, talk about what I've been watching. Because I started doing that with my movie nights last year, and it ended up working out pretty well. And it's nice to have that discussion. Now, granted, there's not going to be much of a discussion because it's just me talking into a microphone. But I thought it'd be fun just to give us recommendations, and you guys can listen along, and maybe you're watching it too, you know, maybe you're following along. So the big thing I want to talk about are, yes, you heard it right at the top, these Oscar nominations, because, you know, there's been some surprises, there's always going to be snubs, but most of all, I'm pretty happy with what we have here, but I will be diving into the list and the nominations and giving more of my general thoughts on everything. And what I think will be my picks and predictions, and what I think could be winning, what I think maybe should win, and what I think will be, you know, just a sweep. I'm thinking Oppenheimer sweep, which is what most people, I think, in the industry are thinking. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But let's go for these nominations. I've got them up right here on Variety's website. I wanted to do them on the Academy's website, but then they've spaced them out in a weird way of like, they've put actor first, and then down the bottom, it's like got screenplay, and you're like, what the fuck? So Variety's done it in a, it's gone the technical awards first and then gone to the, like the big three, like actress, actor, and picture. So, let's do it. Let's talk about it. Let's start with visual effects. Our nominees for that are The Creator, Godzilla Minus One, fuck yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, and, you know, obligatory, even though I love that movie, obligatory Disney pick in there, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, which I didn't think I'd see here at all, and Napoleon. I would love this to go to Godzilla Minus 1. I think that movie looks incredible. And just, it would be so good to see that. I mean, this, I think this movie could be, should be more in here. But man, I absolutely loved the effects in that film and how scary Godzilla looked. So I that'd be really cool if that that took that home. The creator I actually have not seen yet. I still haven't seen the creator. I'm pretty sure they put that on Disney Plus and I just haven't checked it out yet. So my bad to our Gareth Edwards and John David for that. So yeah, Godzilla Minus One would be my pick. My prediction is going to be Godzilla Minus One too. I think they might give it, they could give it the sweep there. And I reckon they'll go with that and give it to Godzilla Minus One. Now, film editing, we have Anatomy of a Fall. We have The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. I think it should go to Killers of the Flower Moon, but I think it's going to go to Oppenheimer. Look, both of these edits are great. Thelma Schoonacre's edit for Killers of the Flower Moon impressed me the most because I thought it was a really well-paced film for a 3.5-hour movie. But then what Jennifer Leigh is able to do with the story of Oppenheimer and the screenplay that Christopher Nolan wrote and everything he shot, I just thought was also brilliant and how it all came together and really put us within the mind of Oppenheimer as well. How everything moves at such a breakneck fast pace. So my pick will be Kills the Flower Moon, Thelma Schoonmaker, but I think they're going to give it to Jennifer Lame. I mean, look, they might give it to Anatomy of Fall. They might give it to Laurent Sinichel. I'm sorry if I'm butchering that fucking name, but apologies about that. But that is actually one of the movies that I haven't seen yet. And I'm actually about to watch that tonight. So when I say I've finished that list, I mean like I'm gonna finish it. Like I'm watching it tonight. So, but I've heard the editing in that film is really good. But I'm still gonna go with Killers of Flower Moon. But the pick is gonna be Oppenheimer. The prediction, sorry, is gonna be Oppenheimer. Production design, we have Barbie, Killers of Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. Napoleon just really sliding in here with these technical categories. Now, it did look technically good, but still surprised at seeing it in these categories here. My pick actually would be Barbie, Sarah Greenwood, what she did for Barbie, and what Katie Spencer did for set decoration. I was really impressed, and I love the production design for Poor Things. But I was just so blown away by the production design and Barbie. And, I think to really bring that world alive, to make those colors pop, it was like the right type of colors and how everything looked and, you know, plastic looking, but, and so creative with its sequences. That is really a big part of bringing that world to life and that movie. A really strong aspect of that movie when I was talking about it when it came out last year. So my pick would be Barbie. Man. But I'm also really impressed with the production design for Oppenheimer because, you know, they fucking made Los Alamos site. Like, it was real. It was like it was real. And that's super, super fucking impressive. But I think personally, I'm just going to go with Barbie. So my pick's going to be Barbie, but my prediction, I might stick with my guns here and go with Barbie for my prediction. I think I might do that and we'll just see what happens. makeup and hairstyling. We have Golda, Maestro, you know, I expected both of those here. Oppenheimer, Poor Things, Society of the Snow. I think it should go to Poor Things. But they might give it to Maestro for that nose. But I really think she got up Poor Things. You know what? I'm going to stick with my guns again and go pick Poor Things, prediction Poor Things. I'm going to find costume because it just makes sense to go costume straight after that. So costume, Barbie, Kills the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, Poor Things. For costume though, I'm going to go with Poor Things for costume. I absolutely loved the costumes in Poor Things. Absolutely loved them. Because like, it's not just historical designs. There's a lot of unique whimsy in all of the costume design and Poor Things. And, you know, that's a huge part of the film, along with its cinematography, production design, and the script. the adapted script, I'll say. But, yeah, I goddamn love the costumes in that, especially everything that Bella wears. Absolutely loved it. Very unique. So, I'm going to go with Poor Things for that one, but I think they'll go with Barbie. I mean, Napoleon's like your war pick, but I'm still going to go with Barbie, I think, for that one. Prediction: Barbie pick Poor Things for costume design. Sound. We've got The Creator, Maestro, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, Oppenheimer, Zone of Interest. I haven't seen The Zone of Interest. That is the only movie here that I haven't seen, but I'm not going to count that for the list because we're not getting this film to like, I think, February or March here in Australia. So I just have nothing to say for Zone of Interest. So I'm going to go with Oppenheimer. Pick and prediction Oppenheimer for sound. I mean, that sound is amazing. I absolutely love the sound design in that film. So I'll go with sound for that one. It absolutely blew me away in the theater. So I'll pick that for sound. Now moving on to animated feature film, we've got The Boy and the Heron, Elemental, Nimona, Robot Dreams, and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Toughy one for this one, because I do think The Boy and the Heron was beautifully animated. I myself just wasn't a fan of the movie. I really hope Elemental doesn't get it. It looks nice, but I just hope Elemental doesn't get it and Disney gets another fucking thing. Nimona, I haven't seen, so I've got nothing about that. And we haven't also got Robot Dreams here in Australia yet either. Nor do I think it's come to America. But they have nominated that. And they Neon did that. They picked that up. They're distributing that, I think. Because I remember seeing that on Neon's Instagram. So, my pick and prediction, I think, is going to be Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. I've just never seen anything like that ever in animation. So, that's just going to... I'm going to go all in. Cards on the table. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse for animated feature. International feature. We have now... There was supposed to be a lot of movies we're going to make it into here. And there were some that were not allowed in. But what they went with was Il Capitano from Italy, Perfect Days from Japan. I really want to see Perfect Days. Society of the Snow from Spain. That is the J.A. Bayona film about the survivors of that crash in the Andes. Teacher's Lounge from Germany. I've yet to see that. I really want to see the Teacher's Lounge. And Zone of Interest from the United Kingdom. I think it's going to go to Zone of Interest. I think this will be the only award that Zone of Interest will get. It may get sound, it may get screenplay. I've heard the sound plays a big part in Zone of Interest as well. So it may get those ones as well. But I think the award that it's definitely going to get run away with, I think, will be International Feature. It's going to be one of those things that All Quiet on the Western Front did last year when it ran away with International Feature Film. But then that ended up winning Score as well. And I believe the Zone of Interest Score is nominated as well. So I just think this is the award that Zone of Interest will go with. I think will win. Even though I've heard fantastic things about all of these movies, especially Society of the Snow, that really blew up at the end of the last year. A lot of people really love that film. I've yet to see it. Teacher's Lounge, I yet to say as well. And Perfect Days, I don't know when the fuck we're going to get that in Australia, but I've heard really good things about that as well. I love films like Patterson, so people saying it's like that. So, you know, give me that, you know. Documentary short film, we have the ABCs of book banning, Barber of Little Rock, Island in Between, Last Repair Shop. I'm just not going to say anything here because I haven't seen any of these films. I never really have an opinion on these at all. So I'm just going to leave this category out and we'll just see who wins on the day and be happy for them. Documentary feature film, though, I can say a little bit here. Bobby Wine, The People's President, Eternal Memory, I've heard really good things about. Four Daughters, I've also really heard good things about. To Kill a Tiger, I wasn't expecting that one here, but that's here. But the one I have seen is 20 Days in Mariupol. And Mariupol, sorry, I keep saying pool. 20 Days in Mariupol. And that was an absolutely harrowing and just stunning documentary. So I think that could win it. There was supposed to be another documentary here that was one of the favorites, Jean-Baptiste's documentary, American Symphony, I think was supposed to be here, but it didn't make the cut. I think it was on the shortlist. I remember seeing that in the shortlist, but it didn't make the cut. And then I think there was supposed to be some Michael J. Fox's documentary, Still, I think it was called. That won the Emmy, I'm pretty sure. I'll have to double check that one. But they weren't sure to submit that to either TV or film, but it won the Emmy, so I'm guessing they submitted it for TV. And, you know, once you've made up your mind about something, I just assume once you've made up your mind about something or what it actually is, then it can't really qualify for the other thing, if that makes any sense. So that's why that we were probably seeing it on those lists, but we never actually see it here in the finalized picks for documentary feature. I've heard really good things about Eternal Memory and Four Daughters, though, and I do want to check those out before the Oscars, if I can check those out before the Oscars actually happen. But I've got plenty of time, and those Oscars are like March 22nd, so I think I've got plenty of time. But 20 Days of Mariupol, if you haven't seen that, give that a watch. It's sad. Like, don't get me wrong, it's a bit of a bummer. But it's a very urgent film, I think, and I really enjoyed it in that way. Animated feature film, animated short film. We have Letter to a Pig, 95 Senses, Our Uniform, Pachydermy, and War is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko. Again, I've got nothing to say here. I think we can probably see these on Vimeo eventually, but I've got no opinion here, so I can't pick anything, and we're happy for the winner on the day. Live-action short, again, of the same. I haven't seen any of these. I can watch The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, but I just haven't watched it yet. I haven't seen any of those Wes Anderson shorts yet, so I might have to do that before the Oscars come around, or on a rainy day, perhaps. But as much as I like Wes Anderson, and as much as I've heard really good things about The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, I would like another filmmaker to win the live-action short film. Not for a well-established director to come in, make a short film, and then win the category and not, you know, take it away. I mean, it's always an honor to be nominated, but taking away that spotlight from a lesser-known filmmaker. As much as I never really catch the films in this category, you know, it is one that means a lot to me in a different way, because it actually shows, okay, these are the filmmakers to look out for, and then you wait for the feature film that they're going to create. So, yeah. Maybe this year I'll have to get on Vimeo and check these ones out and then make my decision then. But at the moment, I've really got nothing to say here. But I don't know. They might just give it to Wondrous Story of Henry Sugar. And I've heard it's really good. So, but I just, you know, it's like if, because on the shortlist was going to be Pedro Almodóvar's Strange Way of Life with Pedro Pascal and Ethan Hawke. And it's like if that was going to be on the list as well. It's a well-established director. He's made a lot of feature films. Some of him have been nominated for Oscars as well. And then he would come in and put that film in there, and then that would win, you know. It just feels a bit, I don't know. I don't like the spotlight been taken away from these lesser known, not really established filmmakers that actually, if something is a spotlight is shown on them on the night and their film is, you know, really good, then, you know, it gives them a lot of attention, and people keep their eye on them, and they're like, okay, what's the feature going to be, you know? So yeah, that's my thoughts on short film. Moving on to score. Now this one I've got some qualms with, because boy, I had some favorite scores last year. I had some really, I had some scores that I loved last year, and there's some are in here. Some are in here, I will say. So let's read the nominees first, and then I'm going to be like, okay, but also these. we have American Fiction, a film I have yet to see as well. I don't know when that's coming out here in Australia. But then we have the Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, and I just feel like this is just an industry kind of legend pick. It's just like, yeah, John Williams, of course, it's him. Let's nominate John Williams. Let's chuck him in there. And I think that spot could have been filled by one of these here that I'm going to mention soon. But we also have Killers of the Flower Moon, which was my favorite score from last year, Robbie Robertson's score for Killers of the Flower Moon. But my second favorite score, Poor Things by Jurgen Fendricks, is also here, which, lovely. I love that score as well. Very unique score. And then my third favorite score, Oppenheimer's, Ludwig Göransson's Oppenheimer score, is here as well. So some ones that I'm pretty happy here, like the three here, the Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. But I, you know, like I heard that score was just super phoned in. I'm not even that interested. I haven't seen the latest Indiana Jones film because I just heard so much bad stuff about it. And also, I didn't think we really needed it. But I do like James Mangold as a filmmaker, so I do want to see it. But also, it's also 2.5 hours, I've heard. I don't know. I don't want to. I'd rather watch a more interesting movie than some fucking more Disney fucking hodgepodge. But this one, I think more so since it is nominated in other categories, I think the one that should be overtaken, Indiana Jones and Dial of Destiny, is fucking easily Daniel Pemberton's score for Across the Spider-Verse. That score is fucking incredible, man. That is also one of my favorite scores from last year. And I can't believe that is not in there. Pemberton fucking cooked, man, for that score. He cooked. And I cannot believe that is not in there. Cannot fucking believe it. Wow. Like, what? But no, you got to go with John. Like, look, John Williams, legend. I get it. But I heard it wasn't very good. I heard it just sounded like every other one he's done. Not that memorable. But Daniel Pemberton's score makes you want to... It feels like electricity's flowing through your fucking body. It's nuts. So a little sad not to see Daniel Pemberton's work be recognized here, but I also want to shout out some other scores that I really liked from last year. I'm going to use this opportunity to do that. If we're talking TV, I'll chuck in some TV. Andrew Grush and Taylor Stewart's score for House of Usher, Fall of the House of Usher, was also really good. Very Succession-y, very Nicholas Britell inspired, but I think still had an identity of its own. Bobby Krillick's score for Bowie's Afraid I really enjoyed as well. I absolutely fucking loved Gavin Brivick's score for How to Blow Up a Pipeline. Christopher Bear and Daniel Rossen's score for Past Lives is really beautiful as well. I love Akira Ifukube and Naoki Sato's score for Godzilla Minus One. Yes, it took some elements from the original Godzilla, but I think it sampled and, I don't know if sample's the right word, but interpreted them in a way to make them fresh and new. And it's like a motif throughout the whole score. And I just really liked that score. It was really great. And then I want to shout out, Otomo Yoshihide. For his score for Inuo. For their score for Inuo, which I think should have been nominated for animated feature, but we also don't know what year this would have come out. I think it came out like 2 years ago in Japan, but did it get a US release? I'm not too sure, but I watched Inuo the last year and I fucking loved it. And you might see that in a list, in a certain YouTube video. But their score they did for that film was also really beautiful. But if I really had to pick one pick to take over that Indiana Jones one, it's got to be Daniel Pemberton's score for Across the Spider-Verse. And then in the same year, he's doing the score for Slow Horses as well. So, man, just disappointing and sad. And those are the words I have to say. All right, moving on to song now from school. We had The Fire Inside from Flaming Hot, music and lyrics by Diane Warren, because there's Diane's pick. You just can't have an Academy Awards ceremony without a song from Diane Warren. It has to happen. If you don't put a song by Diane Warren in this category, the world literally ends. I heard from an industry professional that if you don't put a song in from Diane Warren, the world starts happening from 2012. Like the moon crashes into the sun. The fucking floor opens up, demons start pulling us into the underworld. It happens, man. All right. This is what I've heard from people that are in the know, that if you do not nominate a score from Diane Warren, it's over for all of us. So they have to do it. It has to be there every year. If it's not there, shit happens. It goes down. So Diane Warren has to be here. So anyway, Diane Warren's here. we got I'm Just Ken from Barbie, which is my favorite song from that movie anyway. It Never Went Away from American Symphony, Jean-Baptiste and Dan Wilson. I think we have, where is it? What Was I Made For from Barbie, Billie Eilish and Phineas. I think that's going to be the winner anyway. And Wajashi, Song For My People from Killers of the Flower Moon by Scott George. I think this is going to go, my pick would be I'm Just Ken, because what a banger. And is Ryan Gosling going to do that at the ceremony? Please, can he perform that at the ceremony? I really hope he could. Interesting not to see, I mean, it'd be weird to see three Barbie fucking songs here, but Dance of the Night by Dua Lipa did not make the cut. So I think it's going to go to the Billie Eilish song, What Was I Made For, for that one. That is going to be my pick is I'm Just Ken, but my prediction is going to be What Was I Made For. Moving on to cinematography, we have El Conde, Edward Lockman, Kills of Flower Moon, Rodrigo Prieto, Maestro, Matthew Libertique, Oppenheimer, Hoyt van Hoytema, and Poor Things, Robbie Ryan. Great picks here. I have not seen El Conde, but great picks. Of course, Maestro is going to get nominated. That maybe does look really good, but also in the least offensive way, Maestro is the Oscar bait film of the year, I think, because Bradley wants that. He wants that Oscar. And nothing against Bradley. Love the boy. Love the man. But, you know, he really wants that fucking Oscar. Oppenheimer's cinematography also is really beautiful. Hoyt van Hoytema. But my pick is going to be Robbie Ryan's. Fuck me. Poor Things cinematography is awesome. That is one of the best parts of the film, is it how it looks. And I'm not just talking about production design, which I did talk about before, but it's how it looks, man. Poor Things should be the winner here, but I could see it going to anything here. I could see just going to Oppenheimer for Poor Things. I could see it going to Oppenheimer to Hoyt for Oppenheimer. So yeah, my pick's going to be Poor Things and my prediction is going to be Oppenheimer. Original screenplay. We have Anatomy of the Fall, which has been sweeping this category in the last few ceremonies. So this could be the winner here. We have The Holdovers, written by David Hemmingson. I mean, Anatomy of the Fall was also written by Justin Trier and Arthur Harari. And Maestro was written by Bradley Cooper and Josh Singer. May December, great to see that here. And we'll talk about that fucking May December slander in a second. But May December, screenplay by Sammy Birch, story by Sammy Birch and Alex Mechanic, and Past Lives written by Celine Song. Great to see Past Lives here. Love that screenplay. There's a couple here that I could have been in here, but we'll just talk about the picks here since we are. I do want to talk about one more thing after the Oscar nominations as well. So I don't want to go too much over time, and I've got to fucking work tomorrow. So let's just get through it. May December, I think that should win because that is a fucking excellent screenplay. That's one of my favorite parts of the movie was the screenplay. But I love the screenplay for Past Lives as well. I also love the screenplay for The Holdovers. So great picks here. But I could see this going to Anatomy of a Fall. It has been winning most of the awards so far. So I could see this going to Anatomy of a Fall. But my pick is going to be May December. And my prediction, yeah, it's going to be Anatomy of a Fall, I think. Adapted screenplay. We have American Fiction written for the screen by Cord Jefferson. Barbie written by Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach. They went with adapted for Barbie, which is interesting, which is, you know, what it should have been anyway, in my opinion. But they ended up going, I remember the thing was going to be, were they going to go adapted or original? And they went with adapted for the Barbie pick. Oppenheimer written for the screen by Christopher Nolan. Poor Things written by Tony McNamara. Poor Things written by Tony McNamara. And Zone of Interest written by Jonathan Glazer. I think, I like Barbie's screenplay, but it's not really the best part of the movie. It's not the one that stands out to me. I'm going to go with, my pick is going to be Poor Things. I haven't read the book, so I don't really know the differences in adaptation. But I'm going to go with Poor Things. But my prediction, this is going to be a bit of out of left field, because I've heard this screenplay is like really good, is American Fiction. I'm going to go the prediction, American Fiction. So yeah, I think that's what's going to be for that one. Supporting actress. Here we go. We get into the big ones now. Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer. Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple. America Ferrera for Barbie. Jodie Foster and Nyad. And the one I wanted to see here, and the one that is it to lose, Daveen Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. I think it should go to Daveen. And it's going to go to Daveen. So that's my pick and prediction for that one. Interesting that we don't have Julianne Moore here for May-December. And then when we talk about an actress, I'll talk about another person as well. But I liked Julianne Moore's performance in May-December. I wouldn't say it's the best performance there. But we're about to talk about the biggest fucking snub of the night. In actor in a supporting role, we have Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction. Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon. Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer. Ryan Gosling for Barbie. Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things. I ask you, with a full heart and a true mind, where the fuck is Charles Melton? Where is Charles Melton? Because that man, quite honestly, gave the best supporting performance last year, in my opinion. And look, I haven't seen American Fiction yet, but holy shit, that man gave the best performance. One of the best performances, hands down, last year was Charles Melton in May, December. And the fact that that man is not here is an absolute travesty. And I really can't wrap my head around the absence of his name here. I just can't. I can't. Who watches that performance? Who? I can't get it through my head. Who watches that movie? Watches that man's performance and says, yeah, that's not worthy of a supporting acting Oscar at all. I don't think so. Ryan Gosling was so much better in Barbie than that. Like, I'm sorry. Okay? I am sorry. What? What the fuck? That is just, I don't understand it. I really do not understand that. Man, a lot of places I think for May December to be in these lists, but just nowhere. Just people weren't clicking with it. I think it's one of the best movies of the year, but people just weren't clicking with it. I mean, I would take out Ryan Gosling and put Charles Melton there. I liked him in Barbie. We were joking about that when that came out. And it actually fucking happened. He got nominated for supporting actor. And he's really good in the movie. Don't get me wrong. He's really good in the movie. But man, Charles Melton. Fuck. Charles Melton broke my heart. Yeah. And while we're at supporting actress as well. Really? America Ferrera for Barbie? Are we doing that? Are we really doing that? Was she that great in that movie? I would soon put Julianne Moore there for a May December as well. So I just don't understand that. What? Is she really like, and that monologue that she has, that's the worst part of the film. I mean, that's just this is a personal preference. It's not objectively like bad, but I just don't like writing like that. And that performance was just so I don't know, man. That monologue just brings that movie to a halt, in my opinion. And it really just fucks with the pacing and just makes it really uneven. And is it because of that monologue? Because other than that, she's fine. She's good in it. But other than that, I just don't think there's anything special there. So, I don't know. Yell at me if you want, but I don't know. Leading actress, we have Annette Bening for Naiad. I haven't seen Naiad, but I've heard really mid things about it. So, I just don't have any interest in watching that. I've also heard she's a shit person as well. Not Annette Bening, Naiad herself. Is it Diana Naiad? Yeah, I've heard Annette Bening's a real piece of shit. Real scoundrel, Annette Bening is. Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon. Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall. Carey Mulligan for Maestro. And Emma Stone for Poor Things. My top two are Emma Stone and Lily Gladstone. But my pick and prediction will be Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon. She has so much just on her face in that movie. And it's such a subtle, quiet, and powerful performance. And it'll also be really great if she won. Like, that would be incredible. And it's not just for, you know, picking that. It's because she actually gave a great, great performance and touched us all in that way. But to have that, for her to have that, and to her to be the first Native American woman to win an Oscar, that's awesome. And you know her speech is going to be great. And I know we shouldn't nominate her for the speeches, but like, it's going to be a fucking good speech. And then the number one reason, she fucking deserves it. It's a fucking fantastic performance. And that will be my pick and prediction. I thought I was going to go to Emma, but I go back to just everything she carries on her face in that movie. And oh my God, it's so beautiful. Actor in a leading role, we have Bradley Cooper for Maestro, Colin Domingo for Rustin, Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers, Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction. Cillian's got this in the bag. He's taken that home. But I think his competition could be Paul Giamatti. I would love to see it go to Paul as well. I would be happy with that. I wouldn't be sad about it at all. But I think Cillian has this in the bag. And my pick and prediction will be Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer. Best director, we have Dustin Triet for Anatomy of a Fall. We have Martin Scorsese for Kills the Flower Moon. Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer. Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things. And Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest. Really cool to see Justine here. Anatomy of Fall did win the Palme d'Or at Cannes Film Festival last year. But people are going off about Greta Gerwig not being nominated for director here as well. And yes, I do have to agree. Because when we talk about Best Picture, Barbie's there. And I've always had this problem with the Oscars. Is that they'll nominate a film for Best Picture, but not nominate the director. And that I just do not understand. Because you do not have the film that you get, that you nominate for Best Picture, without the vision of the director bringing everything together. You do not have that Best Picture without Greta Gerwig's vision. And I just don't... I don't get it. What? But also, who the fuck are you going to eliminate here? You do not eliminate. You add 5 more. I think director should have 10 places. Should have 10, 10 places. I think director should have 10 places. There should be 10 places in director. This is way too short for director. Way too short. 5? No, man. I think for the last few years, when I've been seeing this problem crop up more and more, I've been wanting to push for like more spots for director because, man, it's just not enough. It's not enough for the talent you have on display here. And Greta Gerwig, and another one I'll put in there, fucking Todd Haynes should be in there as well for May, December. But, you know, we've got the picks there. I think it's going to go to Christopher Nolan. My pick probably would be Martin Scorsese, but I think it would go to Nolan for Oppenheimer. Actually, no. I love Marty, but I do think Oppenheimer is Christopher Nolan's best movie. And just, I was really just absolutely floored by the work he put in. So I'm going to go Chris. I'm going to go pick and prediction Chris. Chrissy boy, Nolanator for Oppenheimer. And we'll see what happens on the night. Now the big one, best picture. Let's go through it. American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. Fucking hell. What do you pick here? You have some incredible movies here. This has to be, I think, it's definitely better than the last 3 years, I'd say. But this has to be one of the best crops of best pictures I've ever seen. Because there are some just incredible movies here. And movies that I love here as well. It was great to see Past Lives be put in here as well. Oh my God, I adore that movie so much. Poor Things, I was expecting it to be here after all the nominations, but it's great to see it here as well. I love Poor Things. I love Oppenheimer. Killers of Flower Moon, I love The Holdovers. I wouldn't say I loved Barbie, but I really liked Barbie. But it's good to see it here as well. That's really cool to see. Yeah. I want to watch The Zone of Interest, but when is that coming to our country? I do not know. It played briefly at the Jewish Film Festival last year in Sydney, but I just couldn't be there for that, so it's really my fault for not putting in the effort to get work off and go to Sydney and watch shit. So my pick would be Killers of the Flower Moon. I think it's not only one of the best movies of the year, it really is a fantastic, flooring, important, urgent movie. And it'd be really cool to make that statement and have that as, and not just the sake of having the statement, like I'm trying to mention, but just, it would just mean, that I think that would mean a lot. It would have a lot of meaning behind that for Killers of the Flower Moon to be best picture, because more people would seek that out as well. More people would watch it. More people would get the message. And it's what happened to Parasite. A lot of people love Parasite now after it getting best picture, as it fucking deserved to get best picture. But I see this going to Oppenheimer. So my pick would be Killers of the Flower Moon, but my prediction, I see this going to Oppenheimer. I think it's going to be a bit of an oppie sweep on Oscars night, like I teased before. I think it's going to be a bit of an oppie sweep. And I could see this going to Oppenheimer. So pick Kills the Flower Moon and prediction Oppenheimer. And that's it. Those are the Oscar nominees. Let's take a look at the kind of the how many nominations each film has. We have Oppenheimer with 13. We have Poor Things with 11. Kills the Flower Moon with 10. Barbie with 8. Maestro with 7. American Fiction with 5. Anatomy of a Fall with 5. Holdovers with 5. Zone of Interest with 5. Napoleon with 3. The Creator with 2. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 with 2. Naive with 2. Past Lives with 2. And Society of the Snow with 2. Now, Past Lives, I think, deserves a third one. Because in the directing category, I'd also put in Celine Song. And in the actress in leading role, I would take out Annette Bening and put in Greta Lee for Past Lives. Heartbreaking performance. Staggering. Emotionally shattering performance. And I'd be happy if Margot Robbie was here for Barbie, because I really loved her performance in that movie as well. But like I was saying when Barbie came out, Margot Robbie always surprises me because, like, you just think, oh, yeah, it's Margot Robbie. Of course she's going to give a good performance. But fuck me, that performance was so affecting in that movie as well. And she really played all sides of that character. And, yeah, I would be happy to say that should be Oscar nominated, that performance. But my personal pick to take over Annette Bening and Naiad would be, or Carey Mulligan in Maestro, would be for Greta Lee to be there for Past Lives. So I would then give Past Lives 3 Oscar nominations. And that was how I'd run the show. So the Oscars are going to happen on March 10th, my bad, not March 22nd, March 10th. So that means they'll be happening on March 11th here in Australia. And they're going to be hosted once again by Mr. fucking Jimmy Kimmel. Yay. just when they can't get a good show, or they're going to have a boring show, just get the old Kimmel Master in there and he's going to make a fucking show of it. It's going to be better than Joe Coy doing the Golden Globes, because I heard that was a fucking disaster. And I saw that was a fucking disaster when I watched that monologue. So, yeah. But yay, Jimmy Kimmel again. Yay, great. Just get through the ceremony. We could be done with it. So, yeah, the Oscars are going to happen on March 10th in America, but if you're in Australia, like I am, it'll be happening March 11th and possibly at 12 p.m. I'm guessing it's going to be at 12 p.m., like red carpet at 10 to 12, 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. in the afternoon, I assume. And is that a... Well, it's a Monday for me, so I think I'll be able to watch that because I'll have work in the morning and then I'll be able to come home and watch the Oscars. Yay! Good for me. So yeah, that's it. That's all I wanted to say about the Oscars. Now, I quickly just want to talk about Sundance, because we just had Sundance happen. They announced all the winners, all the awards. I want to talk about some of the movies that did big there and some of the movies that I do really want to see that came out of Sundance. Yeah, here we go. Okay, here we go. So, A Different Man, I really want to see this. This is about an actor called Ed Wood, played by Sebastian Stan. And he wants to drastically change his appearance for a role. And I heard it was very good. Some of the people I watch on YouTube, they recommended it. I've got that on my watch list now. But another one, a big one I've got on my watch list, is A Real Pain, which is Jesse Eisenberg's sophomore film with Kieran Culkin. I remember listening to Kieran on the Conan podcast, I think, and he was talking about filming in Poland. And this movie takes place in Poland, and it's about Jesse Eisenberg and Kieran Culkin. They play cousins, and they go to honor their beloved grandmother. And then they go on a bit of a emotional journey. We'll say that, an emotional journey. And I am very, very interested in watching that film. It's probably going to be sad, but it's going to be interesting. Love Me. I heard it got mixed reviews, but I still am interested in watching Love Me. Kristen Stewart and Steven Yeun's new movie about an online relationship between these two people. And I heard that was... I heard it was like, you know, mixed reactions, but I heard some people really liked it. Adam Bowden and Ryan Fleck's new film, Freaky Tales of Pedro Pascal, I also heard mixed reactions from as well, but I do want to see what else Anna Burden and Ryan Fleck can do after Marvel, because I do like their movie Half Nelson with Ryan Gosling. So I still want to check out Freaky Tales. Between the Temples with Jason Schwartzman. Really wanted to check that out as well. Handling the Undead, Renato Wensiv's new movie about Hot Summer Day in Oslo. And the zombies come out, and it's about a family dealing with that. Not too much information about that movie, but it's Renata Rensev. Like, I've got to see it. I love her, so I've got to see it. It's simple. Hitman played at the Sundance Film Festival as well. That played at TIFF last year, and had some big reactions come out of that one. And it's Richard Linklater starring Glenn Powell and Adriana Adorna. And I'm like, fucking sign me up. It's not that hard. Fucking sign me up. Put me in there. So, yeah, I really want to see Hitman. Netflix, unfortunately, picked that up. Now, I say unfortunately because, yes, it's really good for Netflix to find a movie and put some money in towards it and, you know, spotlight it. But it's Netflix. It's fucking going to go straight to streaming. They're not going to play it in cinemas unless what they want is to qualify for an Academy Award. So they're just going to take the film and just put it in on the fucking streaming service where it's going to be lost and forgotten. It's going to be seen on the weekend and then lost and forgotten. And then we're not going to fucking talk about it ever again, which is just always just sad. I really always have such strong mixed reactions when Netflix picks something up from a festival because it means that, yay, cool, they're going to give money towards it and they're going to help out the filmmakers. But also, oh, fuck. People are not going to see this movie because they're going to have Netflix and they're not going to experience it on the big screen, which is the way you should watch these movies, which is on the big screen. So, I mean, I would like Hitman to get a theatrical run. I'd love to watch this movie with a crowd because I've heard it's really funny. And I love Richard Linklater. But unfortunately, I think it's going to come to Netflix and stay on streaming. June 7th, I think, is the release date for Hitman. Yeah, really unfortunate, but that's coming out middle of the year, but unfortunately I think only on Netflix. Now, they also did play How to Have Sex, but that got released on Mubi, and did that play at TIFF, I think, last year as well? This is Molly Manning Walker's feature directorial debut. She also shot Scrapper, which was a film from last Sundance, and which I saw a couple of days ago. It was really good. And I'll fucking talk about that in a minute. Yeah, How to Have Sex. I really enjoyed that. You may see that on a list in a future video. But the big one that I really want to see, and this is here, and this is the one I was waiting for. This is the big one that I really want to see, is I saw the TV glow. This is Jane Schoenbaum's sophomore film. Sorry if I said that last name wrong, but they did We're All Going to the World's Fair, which I'm going to be honest, I have yet to see, but my friend has seen it and she said it's really, really good in what it portrays and it really nails it, really nails that aspect. So I do want to watch that. I had a plan on watching that this weekend, but I ended up watching Anatomy of a Fall instead, like picking to watch Anatomy of a Fall instead and watching these other movies that I'm going to talk about. Looking at the premise for I Saw the TV Glow, looking at the stars in it as well, and just that one still image tells you so much, I think, about what to experience in this film. I've also heard the soundtrack is really killer, and I'm really, really excited to see I Saw the TV Glow. I don't know when we're going to get it. No one knows, but I'm excited. I'm excited. Now, the film that won the US Dramatic Competition Award was this film called In the Summers, which is about a journey that spans the formative years of their lives. Two sisters navigate their loving but volatile father during their yearly summer visits to his home in La Cruz, New Mexico. Now, this was on a radar because this stars Sasha Carley from fucking Flash last year, from The Flash. And it won the US Dramatic Award. That doesn't mean everything. But, you know, it does mean something to some people. I remember, what was it, a movie that won a few years ago that just like really went under the people's radar and was on an end of year list and people said it was like, yeah, it was fine. I forget what it was called. It starts with S, I think. But I've heard this movie is really good. It was a lot of people's favorites as well at the festival and a very emotional film. And, you know, it's a father. Your boy's got daddy issues, so he's gonna have a rough time. Okay. Next is it's What's Inside. This was also unfortunately picked up by Netflix. And this one looks really interesting. A pre-wedding party descends into an existential nightmare when an estranged friend shows up with a mysterious suitcase. People said it gives them bodies, bodies, bodies vibes. It gave them talk to me vibes. And it looks really interesting. The colors apparently, I mean, this one still image again is really interesting to look at. I love the images that filmmakers choose for this, their images, because some of them are just really beautiful and very striking and tell you so much about the film in one image. And I love that it's like a challenge. Like you've got, what do you choose for the image to show on this website, to show on the program and everything. And some of these images are just fucking beautiful. I love them. So that was another big one that I really wanted to see, was It's What's Inside. And that is going to go to Netflix as well. They ended up buying that for $17 million. So one of the biggest buys at Sundance. And you'll be able to see that on your screens soon. We also have Love Lies Bleeding, which is Rose Glass's new movie. She did St. Maud, which was, I think, a good movie. I like St. Maud. But this one stars Kristen Stewart and Katie O'Brien, and it's about a gym manager that falls for an ambitious bodybuilder, but their love ignites violence, pulling them deep into the web of Lou's criminal family. Because Lou is played by Kristen Stewart. And apparently this is like a little violent, little bit much for you. But I've also heard it's really, really engaging and thralling. And the chemistry between Kristen Stewart and Katie O'Brien is really good and really palpable. And Rose Glass, like, I like St. Maud, so I would like to see what she does next. And I've heard a lot of good things about this one. So I haven't seen the trailer. Apparently people say the trailer is really good, but I don't really watch trailers anymore. But this one's already been picked up and distributed. It's going to be distributed by A24. So looking forward to that. There was another one, My Old Ass, Megan Park's new film. It stars Aubrey Plaza as this young girl. She ends up having this like a mushroom trip, and she encounters her older self, and she has a journey of self-discovery. And you know what? We've been on this road before. If you've ever dealt with psychedelics, you've experienced this before. You know, you've talked to your younger self sometimes. Now, I don't think I've ever talked to my younger self. I've had a lot of weird things happen when I'm on psychedelics, but I've never really talked to my younger self. But I know a couple of my friends that have actually talked to their younger selves, or experienced in a way a manifestation of their younger self. And this could be an interesting film to watch. Also, Aubrey Plaza, that's my queen, so I have to support her. Megan Park, she did The Fallout, I think, from 2021 with General Taker, which I haven't seen, but I heard is a very good movie. People liked it. So maybe I need to watch The Fallout, you know, and looking forward to checking out My Old Ass. And I think finally the last one I want to talk about is The Outrun. This is one of the premieres at the Sundance Film Festival. This is starring Saoirse Ronan, and it's about this woman that she lives a life on the edge in London. Her name is Rona, and she attempts to come to terms with her troubled past. She returns to the wild beauty of Scotland's Orkney Islands, where she grew up, hoping to heal. This is adapted by the best-selling memoir by Amy Liptrot. Apparently, according to IndieWire, or David Ehrlich at IndieWire, I think it's David Ehrlich that did this review, this is Saoirse Ronan's best performance that she's ever done. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Saoirse. I'm a Saoirse boy. And I am very excited to see what she does here. This could be a future Oscar film, you know. This could be a future performance being nominated, what we just talked about in the Oscar nominations. Past Lives, Sundance, you know, I mean, some of these films go on to win Oscars. And that's why I like to bring up the importance of the Sundance Film Festival and talk about my excitement and my passion for Sundance Film Festival as well. Because I myself one day want to get a film into Sundance and, you know, kick off the journey. This year, I'm putting a lot more focus into the steps I need to take to get towards that. I did more writing today. I wrote 20 more pages of my feature film script. I'm writing a TV show as well. And, you know, I bought a camera last year. I want to shoot my next short film. So it feels good getting more serious about that and actually I don't even just want to attend Sundance. Like I said, I would one day I do want to try and get a film into Sundance and be a part of that community and be a part of that excitement. And if that happens, I'm gonna fucking cry. If that ever happens, dude, check my pulse. If that ever happens, if my film ever gets into Sundance, check my fucking pulse. Because I guarantee you, I will be dead on the floor. Just from shock, I think. I just won't be able to speak for days, probably. I either won't be able to speak, or I'll just be a fucking... I'll be water. I'll just be fucking water. So, anyway. That's Sundance 2024. Those are the ones I'm looking forward to. Those are my interest, the ones I'm most interested in. There is, of course, of like a whole program. You can go on Sundance's website and check out the whole program. Check out all the award winners as well. And like I said, these movies, they go on to win Oscars. So, it's good to pay attention to the films that come out of the Sundance Film Festival. And, yeah, here's to another year of good movies. But before we go, though, I want to talk about some movies that I've seen. And I want to fucking give you some recs, you know? I don't want you to just go out and watch Aquaman again. Okay? So, I want to talk about... Oh, my God, do I talk about this? Okay, I'm going to save some of these for the January video, but I'll talk about a few here. I want to first talk about Eileen. This was adapted by the book from Atosha Mosveg. I read her book, My Year of Rest and Relaxation, and I really enjoyed that. I've yet to like read Eileen. It's another movie of hers. There's another book of hers that I want to read as well. Oh, it's about sailing. Oh, I forget what it's called. But, yeah, I do want to read the book Eileen, but I was interested in the movie because I think this was at Sundance last year, and this stars Thomas McKenzie and Anne Hathaway, Shea Whigham, and it's about a woman named Eileen. It takes place in 1960s in Boston, Massachusetts, and she's a prison secretary, and her life's pretty much going nowhere. She has a father that's abusing her all the time, calling her fucking shitty shits. He's calling her shitty names. He's really just being really disrespectful. Her life's just fucking going nowhere. And she has a lot of fantasies throughout the day of, like, you know, people fucking her and her doing certain things like shooting her father in the head. Maybe she's stabbing someone. Maybe she's just taking more agency in her life. And she, but the thing about Eileen that I really liked with Thomason's performance is she's very observant about a lot of things. She pays attention to things, and she pays attention to things that I think most people wouldn't really, you know, look at a second time, you know, give a second look to. And she eventually meets this psychologist. Played by Anne Hathaway. Her name's Rebecca St. John. And Anne Hathaway, you know, she's just kind of like, she is everything, I think. And then she is everything Eileen wants to be. She is very confident, especially around men. She doesn't give a fuck what people think about her. She smokes. She talks in a way of, you know, like living a very free life, free spirited. And she's pretty much everything Eileen wants to be. So they get together, they become friends, and things start getting a little interesting when Rebecca doesn't show up for work one day. And I will not say what happens after that. And like I was saying before, I do love both performances here. I always love Anne Hathaway. I always love Thomas and McKenzie. She's really good at playing these kind of, I think someone said it before on Letterboxd, these wounded bird characters. But it reminded me a lot of her character in Leave With No Trace, which I still think is her best performance. The way she plays Eileen, like I said, she's very observant and she looks at things a lot. She's always looking at everything. And I loved how much curiosity Thomason is able to display with her eyes and with her facial expressions. And, yeah, she was just so lovely to watch throughout the movie. Anne Hathaway just kills it as Rebecca. Like, she's everything that Rebecca is on the page, and Anne Hathaway does an absolutely great job. It's filmed really nicely. It takes place around Christmas. So if you're into that, that's, you know, that's great. If you love Christmas, especially snowy Christmases, you know, if you love that, you know, we just had the holdovers. So, I think the holdovers has a cozier, you know, we just had the holdovers. So if you want more of that vibe, you might get that or more of Eileen, but you're getting more of a slow burn, tense drama here with Eileen. So in a way, this film was some things I didn't expect. So in a way, this film was things I did expect, but in a way also, in another way, this film had things I didn't expect to happen. And I'll be honest, I thought I knew where this film was going, and then it got me. It went in a way that I was not prepared for. So, yeah, I would give a recommendation. I just had nothing to say when I watched the Letterboxd because I just had nothing to talk about. I just didn't know what to say. So, here is all the things I'm saying now, and I would recommend Eileen. I think it is a pretty good movie, and if you love Thomas McKenzie, if you love Anne Hathaway, if you love that kind of slow burn, tense drama, Eileen, it would be a recommendation for me. That Eileen would be a recommendation from me. Then I watched this film called Upon Entry. This is mostly in Spanish, I believe. But there are some English-speaking aspects throughout. And this is about a couple that is trying to move to the United States, specifically to Miami, and then they want to move around after that. But they are talking about moving to the States. They go to the airport, and they think they're going to get through the security because they pick someone that they think is going to let them through because he just keeps letting people through. And he's like, okay, well, hopefully we get that one. And then what happens is they get stopped and they get taken to a room where they get further interrogated about their intentions in the United States. And this movie is one of those movies where you are terrified the entire time. You can't breathe. You're on the edge of your seat and you're like, what the fuck is going to happen next? And that is exactly how I felt, and genuinely how I felt watching this movie. And then when everything comes to the end, and then you get that final line, which is amazing, and then they cut to black, you can finally breathe again. And that is Upon Entry. Wow. It's only 70 minutes. It's only 70 minutes. And I think it's well worth your time if you want that tense experience. That if you're not getting that tensity from Irene, you know, if you're not getting that tension from Irene, oh my god, you want to turn that shit up to 11, chuck on Upon Entry and check that out. This is a film from a couple of years ago. I think I played at a festival in 2022, but got a release in 2023 and came to VOD late last year as well. And yeah, finally checked it out. And I would fucking, if you want that tension, and if you want a fucking true ass horror movie, 70 minutes of fucking holy shit, can this end? Is Upon Entry. And when it finally ends, you breathe that fresh air, you breathe that sigh of relief, but also you just feel satisfied. You feel like you've eaten a meal. And that was Upon Entry for me. So that is a big recommendation for me. And then finally, I watched Scrapper. This is a film made by Charlotte Regan, and it's shot by, who I mentioned before, Molly Manning Walker, who also made How to Have Sex. And this movie was really, really cute. It's about a girl, and her mother has passed away, and she's living on her own. And she's living with her friend as well. Like, she hangs out with her friend, Ali, and she lives on her own. She talks to social services and says that she has an uncle that is looking after her. And, you know, has an uncle that's looking after her. And she tricks people into pretending to be their uncle. And that's how she gets through that. She pretty much has a way for everything to get through everything. And yeah, like I said, she lives on her own in this flat in, I assume it's London or around in the UK somewhere. But I just thought this movie was adorable. Lola Campbell's performance was great, but I didn't mention, and now I'm going to mention now, that Harris Dickinson is in this as well. And I love seeing Harrison Dickinson and things, man. Ever since Triangle Sadness, I've loved seeing Harris Dickinson in things because I think he is one of the actors to watch at the moment, and I think he's going to do even more great things. I think I'm seeing soon enough. I'm seeing a Best Actor nomination for this man right here. This to me was like if After Sun wasn't as heartbreaking, wasn't as gut wrenching, and was a little more cuter. But I think even towards the end, it still packs a nice emotional punch and it has a really great message. And I love the playfulness of the movie as well. There's a lot of like scenes where characters are like kind of interviewed. And it makes sense of in the film because I feel like you're watching it from, Georgie's perspective, who the child is in the movie. Her name is Georgie. And, yeah, there's a lot of like whip pans and it's like of what she imagines and Ali imagines things to be. And I really liked that playfulness that Charlotte was able to put into the movie. And it just gives it that extra oomph, you know, of making something unique. But I was really reminded of After Sun because of the father-daughter aspect, because Harris Dickinson comes in and he pretty much ruins everything, ruins the fun, because he says that I'm your father. I'm Jason and I'm your father. And then he just inserts himself into her life and pretty much tries to become her dad. And, but because he's been gone for like, 12 years, she's like, fucking no, where the fuck were you before? But obviously you can imagine the dynamics a bit more, playful and a bit more, obviously I can't fully, imitate the dynamic that you see in the movie, but you just have to watch it for yourself. Soon they have to learn to be in each other's space, have to learn to love each other, have to be father and daughter. And I loved the way they went about it in the movie. There's a great scene. It's probably my favorite scene in the movie is when they are looking at a couple across at a train station. They're looking at a couple across the train tracks and they pretty much pretend to be those people, but having a conversation in their voices. And the way Harris Dickinson and Lola Campbell, do it is just so beautiful to watch. And I was laughing. I was having a great time watching that scene. And everything that comes out of that scene, I think, is also really beautiful. So if you want to chuck on a cute movie, I would suggest Scrapper. If you want to be tense, chuck on Upon Entry. But if you want to have a cute time, a bit more of a lighthearted time, After Sun without the gut wrench, Scrapper. I would recommend Scrapper. Great little British indie film. Definitely not a waste of time. And that's going to bring it to the end, guys. We are getting quite over time, so I'm going to bring it to the end there. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Check out those movies, Eileen, Scrapper, and Upon Entry when you get the chance to. I'm also watching True Detective Night Country and wasn't liking it at first, but now I'm liking where it is going and I'm looking forward to the next episode tomorrow. Just wanted to chuck that in there. But anyway, I think I'll talk about that when the show finishes and we can talk about that more in depth when the season's done. But that's going to do it for me, guys. I'm going to go to bed. I'm going to go to work tomorrow, edit this when I can, get this out there as quick as I can. And I promise you on the next one, we will be talking about The Killer and my thoughts on that and my in-depth thoughts. So it's going to be a full spoiler chat on The Killer. If you have not seen The Killer, do not listen to the next podcast, please. I implore you, do not do it. But if you just don't fucking care, sure, listen to it. Great, thank you. But yeah, I will talk to you guys then. And then you should be seeing that first part of the list videos for 2023 on my YouTube channel very, very soon. But of course, everything I'm talking about, all the updates and everything will be on Instagram. I don't use Facebook anymore. So the Facebook page is going to be like disbanded. Deactivated. So if you wanted to catch everything, if you want to get all the updates, Instagram, go Kyle_Cruz on Instagram. And that's where you get all the updates, guys. That's me. I'm signing off. I'm going to bed. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe and I will talk to you in the next one.